Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. There's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres Astros, as we speak here on Monday, about to play a three-game series at Petco Park. Very important, very exciting. Like, I'm loving this time of year. It's just so fun to be, like, just following and writing about and talking about a winning team. I imagine that fans feel even more so. Ryan, where would you like to start?
The Padres have a magic number. We've reached a point in the season where the Padres have a magic number. That magic number is 8. Let's just go over a little bit what has to happen for that magic number to get smaller. It's a combination of Padres wins and losses by who exactly,
Kevin? The Braves.
The Braves.
I think it's 9 for the Mets because they have the tiebreaker against the Padres, having won the head-to-head, but it's 8. Okay. And to put that into I guess the easiest way, or one of the easiest ways for me, even though it is fairly easy the way you just explained it. It's a combination of Padres wins and Braves losses. Okay, fine. They add up to 8. Padres are in. If the Padres go 8-4, the Braves cannot make the playoffs. Or, I mean, cannot pass them. So the Braves cannot pass the Padres. The Padres go 8-4, they're in the playoffs. There you go.
Right. And if in this, again, magic number just gets them into the tournament here. There's so much still at stake, whether it's being the number one wildcard spot, which would get you a 3-game series at home, whether it's being the number two wildcard spot, which would get you, again, playing the number one guy instead of a division champ. Shoot, Kevin, even the National League West appears up for grabs. Let's talk about that. It's that number has shrunk. The Padres are how many? 3.5 back?
3.5 back with... The Dodgers have 13 to play. The Padres have 12 to play. As a matter of fact, all these other teams have 13 to play that are involved here. To me, here's the deal. Like September 4th or something, it was 2 games. Okay. Right. So 3.5 is better than what it got up to 5.5 or something. Great. The Dodgers have 7 games remaining against the Rockies. Is it 7 or is it 6? Whatever. They have 6. They have 6 games against the Rockies. They go to Colorado, or they are at home against Colorado, play the Padres next Tuesday to Thursday in Los Angeles, and then they finish the season at Colorado. Now, look, we've seen it all year. It's about what that team's doing, right? Like, and going to Colorado can be tough and all that. It's just hard. They also play at Miami after they finish their series today against the Braves. What's with the Braves having all these wraparounds at home? The Padres played them on a Friday to a Monday. The Dodgers are playing them on a Friday to Monday. Anyway, at least once a show, my brain has to go off like that. But the Dodgers then go to Miami. I mean, it's just no matter what, 3.5 games in 12 games is a lot to make up. That seems like a lot. To me, though, the exciting thing is that for Padres fans, but I'm thinking Padres fans, to have that home series, Padres are in a really good spot to get that home series.
Yeah, no, they are. They absolutely are. I think of it too. If a week from now we're talking about that Dodger lead being 2 games, I think into a 3-game series with the Padres, all of a sudden that adds a little bit of extra drama. I feel like I'm getting distracted here, though. The most likely realistic goal here is to be the number one wild card team, because again, that gets you a best of 3 series. All 3 games are in your place, and you're playing not a division champion, not the Dodgers. You're facing the number 2 wild card team, which right now could be the Diamondbacks or the Mets.
I'm sorry. If they are facing, if they're the number 2, yeah, would be the Diamondbacks.
No, if they're the number 1 wild card team. Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, and I'm thinking, Mets have a really hard, I've got my sights set, and I believe the Padres probably do, not like they're looking ahead like we are, but, and I think people around the league that I talk to, Padres Diamondbacks are going to face each other 6 games in a row. But look, there is, I guess, a lot of time and a lot of things can happen and all that. But the bottom line is, this is the kind of stuff that we're talking about now, because the Padres have set themselves up really well. That was a really big sweep in San Francisco. Now, we will pivot at some point. It's up to you, Ryan, to bad news out of the weekend, or the potentially bad news. But that was a really big sweep.
A really big sweep. And again, no game bigger than Sundays and here's how we'll transition into this. No game was bigger than Sundays where, the Padres get a pinch hit home run from Fernando Tatis Jr. in the 8th inning. take a 2-1 lead on San Francisco. They get to the ninth, and a recurring theme we've seen here, Robert Suarez struggles. Gives up a absolute moonshot home run to Elliot Ramos, and all of a sudden they're tied. Padres go ahead and put up two in the top of the 10th, give up one in the bottom of the 10th and escape. But Kevin, you've written about it. We've talked about it. This is not the Robert Suarez who came out throwing, you know, 15 consecutive fastballs and went 1-2-3, game over, like he had earlier in the year. What is it? Is it execution? Is it exhaustion? Is it something else? Where are we at with him?
Yesterday's pitch didn't move.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't looked at them all here recently as he's gone. I mean, we can go back to whenever you want. I mean, he had a 1.02 ERA like on July 4th and a, almost five since then. His last eight appearances, at least one base runner, a run, at least a run in four of those past eight. Like, he's not dominant Robert Suarez. So I'll stop right there and say, look, every reliever goes through this, okay? But the Padres are being all of a sudden billed as perhaps the team, like in the National League especially, because of that bullpen. And I think there's a lot of ways we can go on this. Well, okay, except for now their closer's struggling. Oh, except for now they also have another closer in Tanner Scott that they can kind of move things around, right? Soften Robert Suarez's landing spot a little bit. Jason Adam, man, he's working on, I think it's what, 10 appearances, 10 innings in a row without a run. One run in his last 21 appearances. Like, that's the good news out of the bad news. So the Padres are still in a really good position. But yeah, like wrong time for Robert Suarez to have this happening. The Mike Schilt will tell you, ball coming out of his hand, good. Velo, okay. Some of those pitches are flat, man.
Yeah.
And then I'm not smart enough to know, okay, so now does he need to use the change up, the whatever he was throwing before, the cutter, whatever? Like, does he need to do these things? I'm not smart enough to know, but what I do know is bad timing.
He also, I think, has a habit, at least recently, of getting behind in counts early. You know, you can see that, you know, two quick balls and all of a sudden, you know, really good point. I mean, maybe you take a little off to throw a strike, right? Maybe you, you know, maybe you throw something that comes out flat because you're really trying to not run it to 3-0 in a close game, you know?
You good point, because a lot of this, when you're throwing 100, 101, like the conviction, the movement, there's just a lot that goes into making your pitches effective. And nothing, those are all factors right there. Right. That's a really good point. Because he's been around the plate, but he's missing.
Right. Right. At what point would Mike Schilt and the Padres consider not, I mean, we've talked about giving Suarez a little time off, but at what point would somebody else be closing close game? We need to see this happen more, do you think?
Look, guarantee you they're talking about it. Guarantee you. Now, I'm not calling Mike Schilt a liar. Like, I believe he has every intention of running Robert Suarez out there the next time to protect a one-run lead. Maybe. I mean, like, they would be, I mean, I'm just saying it would be asinine to not be talking about it. Right. You don't just have Jeremiah Estrada and Adrian Morejon anymore. And kudos to those guys for like pitching really well in high leverage situations and that sort of thing. But like, there's a reason you went out and got Jason Adam and Tanner Scott. It was to give you a better seventh and eighth inning guy, but also give you a parachute now. Yes. So absolutely they're considering it. When? I bet you Robert, they're winning by three today. I don't know. I bet you Robert Suarez is, well, maybe not today. Let's say tomorrow. Robert Suarez is in. They're winning by one, and we see Jason or Tanner Scott or Jason Adam coming in, depending on who's coming up. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Wow. And again, this isn't to diminish what Robert Suarez has done. I think he's already exceeded any even optimistic homery expectations anybody could have had for him. He's been great. But you're right. Something is clearly off. And, you know, you break this down in your Padres daily newsletter so well. You know, he was amazing until about 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, you know, and he's been pretty pedestrian since.
Yeah. And especially lately, the last month, especially the last, I say, 3 weeks where you're like, oh, before that, it was like, nah, okay. You know, this is what relievers do. You can't go, you're not going to save 40 out of 40. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
You know, Robert Suarez, and we'll go back and we'll look at this, right? If things go horribly wrong, the four outs, the protecting all the four-run leads. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm all for it because that's the reason the Padres have 85 wins for the 10th time in their in franchise history, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Robert Suarez has been huge. Robert Suarez is now also at 2.2x of last year's innings. He's thrown right. more innings than he has since 2021 in Japan. So, like, at some point, mm-hmm. but the velocity's there, but the velocity is not all of it. So I honestly, I don't have like the answers for it. It's just these questions that we have are the point. They're completely valid, and how the Padres handled this going forward is big.
Right. And this is where we couch it. This is as sort of a co-host here, Kevin. This is where I swoop in and say, isn't it nice that we can break apart and break down Robert Suarez's velo stuff, because every game matters so much now, right? It's September, and we're not talking about the colors of the uniforms or what double A guys might be on the roster next year or who might be their 30th hitting coach in 31 years, right? We're talking about stuff that matters because the games matter. Starting again with the three-game series beginning tonight at Petco Park, the Houston Astros are in town, and the Houston Astros are a darn good baseball team. This isn't the Rockies and the Giants coming through here. This is a playoff team.
Yeah, right there with the Padres in virtually every category, either above or below them. And here's the interesting thing. On June 18th, they were 10 games behind the Mariners. They were 33-40. They are 48-28 since. Wow. Okay, so they come in here at 81-68. Mm-hmm. The Padres on June 18th, the same day, were 37-40. They are 28-25 since. So, like, June 19th is the turnaround point for both of these teams. If you wanted to pick one turnaround point for both of these teams, they are, I think, 4.5. Hold on. Check.
Notes. Yep. 4.5. Yes.
The Mariners in the AL West. So yeah. And you do get to see Framber Valdez on Wednesday, but the other two guys going for him, and I can't remember Spaghetti guy. Arrighetti. He goes tonight against who's going tonight, by the way?
Tonight?
Yu Darvish. Sorry.
Yu Darvish, yes.
Yu Darvish, Michael King, and Dylan Cease, if I'm not mistaken. The Astros, yeah, they're a good team who also are fighting for something, right? Like, the Giants were fighting for pride. As a matter of fact, Bob Melvin called a team meeting on Saturday night, reportedly telling them, you know, that wasn't Major League Baseball, right? They'd been shut out in three straight games. The 147 or 48-year-old Giants had never been shut out in four straight games. The Giants were playing for pride, right? The White Sox are going to come here at the end of the week trying to avoid history. The Astros are a good team playing for, you know, playoffs.
Yeah, they've got a 4.5 game lead in their division. Things would have to go pretty sideways for them to not win their division. And again, you know, four games below the Padres just in terms of wins this year. Padres are sitting 85 wins. Astros are at 81.
Josh Hader comes to town.
That was my next question. Oh. Funny that we've been talking about bullpen stuff with Josh Hader coming to town. Here's a softball question. How do you think he'll be received?
Oh man, look, there's almost, and I am a guy who will defend players and their business decisions, and anybody who can look at it soberly understands where these guys are coming from and how, like, teams are doing one thing and players, you know, they've earned their right to take care of themselves. But Josh Hader brought this on himself. There was a better way for him to handle what he did here. Let's give him credit. That guy helped the Padres to the 2022 National League Championship Series. He was incredible.
He got the three. I'm going to watch how I say this. I'm in my 40s. Josh Hader got the three toughest outs maybe in my life, right? And not just the Dodgers, like the Dodgers, right? In the ninth inning of what ended up being the playoff clinching victory against LA in 2022. I think for a lot of people in time, they will remember him as being that guy and not the guy who kind of didn't want to go to the post when the Padres were fighting for their playoff lives a year ago. 3.32 ERA this year, a tick higher than what it's normally been. He struggled. I mean, he's taken seven losses, pitched in 65 games, 31 saves.
I'm pretty sure. Hold on a sec. Again, check notes. Four times the guy's gone two innings. Now, that was as predictable as anything. All right. There's a whole lot of stuff we don't need to get into. The guy was protecting himself based on what he had perceived and does seem to be factual about him sort of getting screwed by the Brewers and arbitration and overuse and all that. But early in the season, especially, though he did one about a month ago, went two innings. He's gone multiple innings several times. Yes, struggled big time early, fixed it, and then has had not quite Robert Suarez-esque troubles, but has allowed quite a few has allowed runs, I believe, in four of his last eight appearances.
Yeah, he's – and again, by the way, to understand his issues a year ago, which was, you know, he was happy to work more than an inning if a team was going to commit multiple years and if the team was going to take the – bear the brunt of –
yes,
not having him available, right, if he got hurt. I understand that. This guy just made generational money with the Houston Astros, and he's going to pitch in a lot of playoff games.
Which is his right, He went a little too far, was a pretty defensive about it. When I was very, very supportive of Josh Hader in terms of understanding of Josh Hader until it reached a point where, like, dude, you keep saying you're going to be ready and you're not.
Right. Well, what did he say? Was I think he lost a lot of Padre fans right around this time a year ago when he said, so are we a play? What are we a playoff team? Right. Wasn't it something along those lines? Was he in San Francisco?
They end up missing the playoffs by two games. Look, it's a little too much to put it on him, but you are right on. You are spot on. That was asinine. To have not been available to come into a game that the Padres, he could have locked down. He could have at least kept it tied, or he could have locked down a win, and he didn't. And then to say, like, act like the reporters were idiots for talking to him about it. And it just – and it has nothing to do with how he treated the media. It had to do with – he was like, well, what are we, a playoff team? Thought you were trying to be. Right, his manager's apoplectic. His teammates are kind of going, what?
And I think that's when we talk about Robert Suarez, to just kind of put a bow on that. I think one of the reasons why this is sort of complicated territory, if you're not you, Kevin, covering the team every day, if you're just somebody who's watching, I think a lot of people really like Robert Suarez. I think a lot of people saw his willingness to go to the post every day, to pitch more than one inning, to, when asked about it, say literally – maybe the most positive thing you could possibly think of, right? I think people like this guy.
Yeah.
But man, I mean, if they start losing games because he can't close them out, this could be a real problem heading into October.
It could. And that's why I would say that right now I'm willing to go but look at what they did at the trade deadline.
Right.
They're still one of the best. If Robert Suarez is pitching in the sixth inning in the playoffs, they still got a pretty decent bullpen. You're troubled. I'm not trying to paint that rosy, but wow, they have really set themselves up well.
They really have. And again, this is why you make moves at the deadline. It is.
It's what it's about, really. I mean, rare would be the team that didn't. And we might have a couple this year that didn't, but they were also, they made incredible moves over the last couple of years or over the winter. And we're talking about the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Yankees, but your World Series teams have made gigantic moves at the trade deadline. And if the Padres get to where they're on the verge of that, we'll take a look at that, at what has happened. Braves, Astros, teams that have won the World Series that made themselves almost a different team. Yeah. In a lot of ways, or in significant ways, in the end of July.
Right. That's one of my favorite things to do with good teams and bad teams, is to, around this time of year, look at their lineup and then go back and look at their opening day lineup or their opening day roster. Kevin, we wasted a lot of energy and column inches and ink talking about Graham Pauly. there's a lot of Woo Suck Go and Graham Pauly talk on this podcast 6 months ago. And, it's a different It's just a different team now. It is just a lot of roster turnover.
Yes, we did. I will let the spirit of your statement go. Because I agree. Yes, we did. And that's what we do. And that's the beauty of a long baseball season. I just remember that, like, the calls for Graham Pauly to be in the lineup all the time. And I was like, no, there's another solution out there. It's not happening.
There was one colleague of ours who I think really thought that he should be getting more at-bats early in the year.
And I certainly had my share of, you know, falling in love with a guy or thinking that, you know, there's a nice quick fix for a team. But, like, the Padres were always going to find a way to be better. They just were.
And that gets us to Luis Arraez. I don't want to, again, belabor something that I think we've written and talked a lot about. What this guy is doing day in and day out, I think is pretty special. We can argue as to whether or not batting average is the end all and be all and how important that is. And if a guy but man, he is fun to watch, especially somebody who grew up watching Tony Gwynn. I find him to be appointment television.
For a while, look, he's been fun to watch the whole time. For a while there, when it was like 300 batting average and 320 on base, you're like, okay, one trick pony. Like, where's the Luis Arraez that was at 320 and a 350 on base? Okay, so that now you and your magic wand and that's awesome. Where's that guy? Well, he's here. He's here. And something I didn't probably explicitly point out enough in my coverage from yesterday, the add-on run that he drove in, which then allows Adrian Morejon to get three outs and not worry about that run that scored in the 10th is, like, I mean, just huge what this guy and Jeff Sanders wrote a really good story with sort of a spin toward, it was on Monday, I believe, last Monday, a spin toward what Luis Arraez does for this lineup in the postseason, what his ability to drive in runs if guys are on base. Like, you don't want to face him with a guy on second because, you know, he can put the ball in play and it might very well be a hit. And, oh my gosh, after him comes Fernando Tatis Jr. So, like, what a presence in the lineup. Like, it has this. Okay. This is the Luis Arraez that you got in May. And that was that way for the start. And then for part of the season, if you were looking at it, like, rationally, it was like, dude, really? Like, I mean, this is cool. You're really super talented, but, like, need to get on base more, man. And the last month, even longer than the strikeout streak, the last month just been fantastic.
It seems like it's coincided with him getting healthy. You know, this is a guy who missed the All-Star game, trying to nurse a thumb injury. Is it as simple as that, or is he doing something different, do you?
I think the thumb is better, which means that it has changed the way that, like, teams, and Jeff alluded to this, that, like, A.J. Hinch said it wasn't even on their scouting report. It's no longer a thing. Bust him inside. And so, yes, I think he got selectively more selective, too. Yeah. Like the numbers don't show it. The guy still chases, like, at an inordinate rate because he can, right? Because he hits really well, swinging at pitches outside the strike zone. But there's selectivity within that. And I just feel like, yes, but I can't imagine this, that the confidence of it not hurting like heck every single time you make contact, that probably helps too.
Nobody is more fun. When I have the games on, I talk about this. I have little kids who are baseball playing kids. Nobody fouls off a pitch more fun than Luis Arraez. I mean, it's cool to watch him kind of waste a pitch.
You know? You and I growing up appreciating Tony Gwynn, right? It was probably, like, even more delightful to watch. And when I kind of poo-poo some things about Luis Arraez, that's just my job to look at this in a way that maybe, like, a 30,000 foot view that maybe, like, you know, AJ Preller and his guys are, I'm trying to compare myself to them, but like that they're looking at it. Cause I need to know that. I need to be able to ask the questions about that. Like, is Luis Arraez worth $15 million next year? You know, that sort of thing. Like, but I have always loved watching him hit and I love watching him play first base. They're not as good as, say, when Jake Cronenworth's playing first base, but he's actually kind of better there than at second, and he's right. He's fine there. But the fervor, the energy, the joy with which he plays, I absolutely love it.
We use the term throwback way too much in sports. He's a throwback. It's as if you owned a basketball team and you brought in a guy who suddenly started shooting a hook shot or shot free throws granny style. You know, I mean, this is nobody does this in baseball anymore.
And sinking them all the time. And so like other guys on the team are like, hey, I know I can't do that, but like I could do this. And yes, absolutely.
It's incredible. I want to bring up, and again, Luis Ariza's tack on run really was the difference Sunday. If we really wanted to oversimplify 2024 versus 2023, it's what the Padres did in sort of late and close situation. You have a great chart in today's Padres Daily about, you know, how many times they've done X versus Y. Now they're 9-1 in extra innings. Last year they were 2-12. They're 21-17 in one run games, 9-23 a year ago. 30-22 in games in which they've lost the lead.
I think that's significant. You understand how often a team scores first and wins, or a team like loses a lead and then they lose that game. To me, that's one of my favorite stats. So go ahead, say that
one. They have won 30 games when the other guy has scored first.
And what was last year?
Eight. They were 8-33 a year ago in games in which the opponent scored. They're already 30-22. By the way, and there's a week and a half left in the season, 2 weeks left in the season. Like, we're through 150 games. You know, that these numbers will grow by the end of the year. It's just, you know, it's incredible. You know, 20 times they've scored in their final at bat to win. Last year, it happened 8 times.
Yep. All of those are related to the same mentality of, and it's Victor Rodriguez, hitting coach, Mike Schilt, for sure, Luis Ariza, other players buying in. We're going to do what we need to do, and we're not going to do any more than that. Now, have there been at-bats? Have there been games? Yes, of course, because they're human, as Mike Schilt will remind us, and it's true. Right. But for the most part, they play the same in the first inning as they do in the 10th, and there you have it. And the way they're playing in the first is pass the baton, and that's what you hear all the time. But this Padres team, I mean, I've been hearing it since 2020, pass the baton, where they thought they had that sort of team. This year, they have that sort of team. Actually, they had that sort of team last year to a large extent, especially the top of the order. But this is the first year where they're actually doing it. I don't count 2020 because it was 60 games.
Sure. And again, since Petco Park opened, we've heard them say, you got to play differently. You got to play a certain way. How many hitting coaches have they fired between, you know, then and now? How many times have they said, we got to use the middle of the field? We got to use our speed and athleticism. And it's easy to say that. It's really hard to get people to buy into that.
And it also was this, Ryan, because you are spot on. And I wrote about this today. I thought it was really interesting that they are three home runs away, three more home runs during this 6-game homestand, final homestand of the year. And they will have hit more home runs at home than any Padres team ever. And they're not trying to, basically. Like they're doing it on accident. But here's the difference. They're saying the same things to a certain extent, but it's not, you got to play differently here at Petco. This year, it's got to play differently here at Petco, man. Let's hit some doubles. Let's hit some line drives. Mm-hmm. That's a difference in approach, in attitude, in what can work. It's look also, and I was going to put this as a tidbit, but I had already kind of, played up Jake Cronenworth's defense. I felt like I was just being too positive and it was 2 a.m. So, Jurickson Profar yesterday, 9-game hitting streak, 10, 11 mm-hmm. games, whatever it was over, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Jurickson Profar laid down a sacrifice bunt yesterday. Like, he doesn't get the Nobel Peace Prize for that. All right. He doesn't get the freaking Heart and Hustle Award for that, though maybe he should. Like that's how they're playing. To me, that personified. He also, great play by their second baseman yesterday to rob him of a hit. Yeah. But like Jurickson Profar, that is why Mike Schilt's okay with Jurickson Profar just doing whatever he does out there, because Jurickson Profar is all about winning. And that is this team this year.
Absolutely. And the Padres done a lot of winning in a key 3-game series here. Again, you know, you could really help your case if you sweep, really hurt your case if you get swept. Otherwise, if they can take 2 of 3 we're looking at this thing becoming an inevitability. I think
maybe if they go 4-2 this homestand, right, like they're in a pretty good shape. They're halfway there on the magic number, right? But next week's tough, man.
Yep.
Next week's tough.
Yep.
Dodgers, Diamondbacks on the road.
Yep. And the Diamondbacks, whatever sort of team of destiny magic dust seems to have been sprinkled over that club. I mean, their come from behind win yesterday, you know, oh goodness.
It's like not every time, but it's like one of those where you're thinking to yourself, every time the Padres are doing something special, you look up, oh my gosh, look what the Diamondbacks just did too. It's it really is remarkable.
Yep. Trailing by 2 in extra innings. I'm not saying the Diamondbacks have luck on their side, but the tying run was driven in with a hit by pitch. So you don't see that very often.
You don't. Padres have had a couple like that. And so they're very, very similar. You hear that a lot. Like, and it will be interesting. Well, I'm sure we'll break that down before they play what is likely 6 games in a row.
Against the Diamondbacks. Absolutely. Real quick, Spencer Arrighetti, Yu Darvish tonight. Hunter Brown versus Michael King on Tuesday. Framber Valdez, who is special and fun as heck to watch, against Dylan Cease on Wednesday afternoon. Kevin, I think we've run out of time. I'm going to come up next episode. I will ask you 2 embarrassing questions at the end, just so we balance out. Does that work?
Right on. I look forward to it.
Awesome. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.